Elliot Friedman, 31 Thoughts, and Hockey Night in Canada. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. We're jam-packed this week, as you know. Last night was pretty cool, and tomorrow night's going to be electric as 22 and 33 go up. We did this a couple of years ago, right, kind of in advance of their final game, and we're probably going to do it in a couple more years when Daniel and Henrik go into the Hockey Hall of Fame. But big game last night as well. We were just talking about Quinn Hughes. Do you think Quinn Hughes is getting the, I don't want to say, you know, getting the headlines he deserves and you know, make it into this everybody against Vancouver thing, but the numbers are starting to get astronomical on the Hughes watch.
Yeah, they are. I mean, he's having a great year. I think it probably depends, like, if you're I look at him and I just see a guy who's a game breaker. There's no question about it. There's lots of different ways he can beat you with the pass, with the skating, with his brains. He's a really smart player. He's better in his own zone than I think a lot of us really realized. I mean, what's not to like there? Nothing.
It's kind of like what you mentioned last year about Elias Pettersson for each. Like, he's a nuclear option, but on the back end.
Yeah, the two of those guys have definitely changed the dynamic of the team and the future of the team. There's no question about it. They both look like franchise players. There's no question about it. When you take a look at where you guys are and the fact that here you guys have a chance to win the Pacific Division, Hughes' immediate impact is a big part of that. I think we all have a better understanding of why the Canucks did not want to let him get on a plane last year from the World Juniors and probably should have just kidnapped him.
Oh, I mean, they probably should have, considering how well-prepared he seems right now, and let alone last season. But one of the things, too, that we've talked about, I know you've mentioned this, too, nowadays, especially when you have these next-level players, and even though they're young on entry-level contracts, you're consistently trying to show them that this is the place to be. You're always selling them on having a chance to win. And with that in mind, the trade deadline's coming up in about a couple of weeks. I mean, you're getting this incredible play from a number of players on the roster. Like, does that kind of embolden this organization a little bit ahead of the trade deadline?
Well, I think you guys would like to do things, but we know why it's trouble, right?
Like, the cap situation.
The cap situation makes it difficult. But in a perfect world, I think you guys would add. I'm just not so sure it's going to be possible. I think it's kind of a bit of a go for it year in the sense of your division's not that strong. You guys, like, I really thought that from game 1 to 82, Vegas would be the best team in the division. And they're still there, but they're kind of lurching a bit, right? There's no reason why you guys can't, at your current pace, be the best team in your division standings wise. And I think you guys kind of look at it, but I'm just not sure how you can add to it.
There is that factor and the pathway in the division. You're right, and I know there's been a lot of talk lately of, hey, let's compare the West to the East and you know, look at these teams battling for wild card spots in the East, and they'd be comfortably in the West. Is this just one of those things that, like, there's every year there's going to be an element of conversation to this, or are people whispering that maybe the 1-16 is, or the 1-8, the 1-16 is the way to go? Is this a problem?
Well, everybody whines about everything, right? Like, there's always going to be whining, Andrew. You know, you should know.
Yeah, someone's always going to be hard done by. I get it.
Like, people are always whining, and you know, for years we heard about how garbage the East was, right? And the West is so much better. It's cyclical. Like, you know, like, the thing is, you can whine and complain about it all you want, but until you change it, this is the way it is. You know, everybody knows what the rules are. Everybody signs up for the same thing. I don't really have a lot of time for these kinds of conversations. You know what the setup is. This is what you got to do. And until it's changed, I know some people would love to change it. This is what you have to live, and all you can do is do your best you can against the teams on your schedule. So, yeah, this year the Pacific Division or the Western Conference is a little weaker than the East. Yeah, how many times have we seen it the other way around? So, yeah, I don't really care for this. You just do what you do and win your games that are in front of you. And so far, you guys are doing a pretty good job of that. Boy, I mean Nashville, it's unbelievable. They played themselves into a playoff berth. They beat Calgary. They got into the playoffs last Thursday. Then they coughed up a hairball up 2-0 on Edmonton. And they got wiped out by you guys last night. I mean, whose fault is that? Yours? No, you just got to play and beat the team you beat.
And well, they're in a tough spot all of a sudden, the Preds. They can't get a save, and I think that's the biggest part of their season. But on the Canucks front, when it comes to trying to make deals at deadline, I think they're looking at trying to add somebody, not with a big salary, if you can't move money out. And one player, I know Irv brought his name up yesterday when he joined us, Ilya Kovalchuk with the Montreal Canadiens. His salary is not big. He's going to be a sought-after player at the deadline. Like, what do you think it's going to take to get him out of Montreal?
Probably a second or third round pick. Like, that's what you're looking at. I mean, you know, you guys, what, you know, you're not going to have a first rounder one of these next two drafts, right? So are you comfortable going two rounds without a pick?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what it comes down to, really. But I do think that Kovalchuk, you know, Montreal, they that one last night to Arizona, that was a bad one. You're up 2-0. Like, Arizona's here, and I was at their skate this morning, and I was just chatting. Like, not a lot of them were skating because it's a back-to-back, and I was just chatting with them, and I was like, you know, I thought it was going to be 8-0, and they really were proud of the way that A. Ranta fought and the way the rest of them just fought back. And, you know, I don't think Montreal's going to make the playoffs. The math is not there. That's a bad one last night. You know, Weber, you know, they haven't announced a timeline yet because I'm not sure they know 100% what it is. It's almost like they're hoping for the best but bracing for the worst on him. I just don't see it. So you probably move Kovalchuk, and I've heard they're looking for like a second rounder if they can get it for him. So I think the biggest question for you guys, and you know, is, you know, do you want to be in a situation where you know you don't have a first rounder one of the next 2 years, and you maybe don't have a second rounder too. I mean, I think there's a limit to teams and how much they want to do that.
Mm-hmm. I'll admit the Kovalchuk thing had me going the other way. Like, I've been surprised because, you know, we hear these stories and it didn't work in LA, and you think, man, like, what is with this guy? And then he gets to Montreal and he's just looked so vibrant and so impassioned, and like right away it looks like he's thrown that team on his shoulders offensively a little bit. I'll admit, Elliot, I was really surprised.
Well, I think a lot of us were. You know, I think it's, you know, just from when he got to Vancouver to LA, right from the beginning it was off. You know, he went in last year and they put him in on a spot in the power play that didn't make a lot of sense for him. And then, you know, that whole year in L.A. last year was such a disaster, and he was kind of the guy who took the poster boy for it. And then this year, again, it didn't get much better. And, you know, I think your pride gets hurt, Andrew. I think you kind of sit out there and say, no, I'm better than this, and I'm not going to let my career end like this. And, you know, Montreal was desperate, and he was desperate, and it was kind of a, I guess it's that desperate hookup, Andrew, I guess. You know, I mean, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, right?
And I I can see your brain reaching for some sort of my life analogy here, but please.
I wasn't going to go there. I think I went far enough, kind of. But, like, you know,
it's
I mean,
the words unsaid, okay?
Yeah. It's the desperate hookup, and it works. Like, in this particular case, like, I think the thing about Kovalchuk is, you got to put him in a spot in the power play where he can do damage, and Montreal's doing that. And secondly, you know, he can't really carry the puck much anymore. So you've got to put him with guys who can, and Montreal can do that. I think that it's kind of like with a lot of players, it's all fit. Like, can you put them into a place like where they can be successful? And I think in this particular case, LA, for whatever reason, couldn't do it, and Montreal can.
Elliot Friedman joins us for Maui Jim Sunglasses. The view is better from here. The way you describe the Shea Weber injury is, I think a lot of people maybe feel, you know, that's how the Oilers feel about the McDavid injury. It's a little vague, 2 to 3 weeks. We hope it's sooner. But, I mean, talk about an impact on the Pacific Division playoff race. This was the injury to do it.
Well, there's no question about that. I mean, it's like losing your nuclear weapon, or at least one of them anyway, because Dreisaitl's pretty good. You know, I was talking to someone today, and he said to me that his theory is there's three injuries you can't overcome. Your number one center, your number one D, and your number one goalie. Everything else you can kind of handle. And, you know, and the theory is going to get tested by that with McDavid. I think the most interesting thing about the whole McDavid thing is that it looks like the Oilers have kind of lost control of his medical. Like, in the sense that, you know, because of what we know now about last year, the second opinion, the third opinion, and the unique way that the Oilers treated it, it just looks like that's kind of going to be the way it is. That whenever McDavid is hurt and there's some uncertainty there, his medical team is going to have a big say. And, you know, I think when you look at this, and it kind of looks clumsy, like it goes from he plays the rest of that game on Saturday and he doesn't, you know, come out to talk to the media, to Dave Tippett saying, I think it's okay, to a couple of days later, you know, we find out he's not going to play for a while. It's just that I think that if you're Edmonton, you're looking at this like, from now on, the medical decisions are going to be made by Team McDavid. And I think that's, you know, but when you have a guy at that level, I think that's kind of what you're looking at.
We know Ken Holland essentially said they're not going to do anything too drastic this season. And now with the deadline a couple of weeks away, and it looks like McDavid won't be back until after the deadline, is that almost a sigh of relief that they can just kind of stay pat and they can always, I mean, not to say that they're going to blame the injury on not doing anything, but does that kind of is there a resistance to add, or do you think they kind of feel like they have to do something now to keep themselves above water?
I don't think the Oilers, I think the Oilers are, like, from what I heard about them, they weren't really willing to give up their first. They proved that in the whole Taylor Hall thing. They're not willing to give up, like, their top end D, like Bouchard. They're not willing to do that. They weren't crazy about the idea of Puljujarvi for a rental, although they would consider it, I guess, in extreme circumstances. So I think that, you know, unless they get something with term, they might be willing to do like a second rounder and maybe a depth D, maybe one of their third or fourth D prospects, maybe. Now, if they get somebody with term, I think there's a difference on what they're willing to do. But I think if it's just a rental, it's not a first, it's not one of their top D prospects, and I'm not even sure they're guaranteed to do Puljujarvi as a rental.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if it goes for term set, they might be willing to do more. But I don't think this forces them to do more than, like, I don't think they're looking at this and saying, oh boy, we got to go out and get somebody. Mm-hmm. I'm not convinced they're doing that.
Did anything surprise you about the big deal we saw yesterday between Pittsburgh and Minnesota?
I think the only thing that really surprised me was that I wasn't sure that Pittsburgh would do Addison and the first. Like, they had two really good prospects, Addison and Poulin, who's in the Quebec League. And, you know, I figured that Minnesota was going to get, because everybody knew kind of Zucker was a big Pittsburgh trade target. I didn't necessarily think that they would do a first and one of those prospects. But when you're in it to win it every year, like those guys are, those are the choices you make, and I don't think anyone's going to scream about it.
Well, and part of it is it kind of a commentary on how far Galchenyuk has fallen? Like, that's not feels like it's not an asset going the other way. It's a please take this guy going the other way.
Well, I think it was an understanding that to make the salaries work, yeah, you had to do that.
But here's,
and Galchenyuk had been available for a while. Like, yeah, everybody knew it. And look, that was the only way he could get moved.
And, you know, the thing with the Zucker deal is he still has 3 years left on his contract. And the number's actually not bad, $5.5 million. You look at the rental market, yeah, especially with Kreider injured as well. I mean, it's uncertain. It seems going to be that good as far as rentals go. Can we see some higher-end players get moved that have term left before the deadline? Or is this just kind of a one-off because of Zucker's situation here?
Well, I think it depends. Like I think there's a couple guys in Jersey people would like to get their hands on. One is Coleman and the other one is Palmieri. So, like I think if New Jersey decided they wanted to do that, I think you could see deals going. Like, from what I understand, New Jersey's looking for young guys who are ready to play bigger roles, like especially forwards, right? And so, like, if you could tempt the Devils with guys like that, you could probably get, I mean, they would at least consider those kinds of players. Like, Minnesota did this because they could get Addison and they could get that first. That's why they ultimately decided to do it. You know, I also think in Minnesota's case, they have a young guy coming next year from Russia, Kaprizov, and they needed to find a spot for him. Mm-hmm. But I think, I think if you're willing to give up good young players, maybe, I don't know, centers too. Yes, I think you could see more. But I don't think that, like, a lot of those trades generally, like, that's different. Pittsburgh's different. A lot of those trades, though, don't happen during the season.
I feel like I was in broadcast school watching Wes Walls and Andrew Brunette on the Wild, and they were talking about getting Kaprizov over.
Yeah, well, this time I think it's actually happening.
Right, right.
Yes.
I'll believe it when I see it, I think. Elliot Friedman joins us on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by Maui Jim Sunglasses. There's been a lot of talk, as you know, around here about Elias Pettersson and extra attention, the abuse, whatever. And I get it, too, because it's easy. Every star goes through it, especially smaller stars. And when the TV coverage puts together a smattering of cross-checks and slashes and puts them all in a package, it really starts to get everybody going. So what
especially as Sedin Week came.
Totally, and it's reminiscent of their early years a little bit. So what is the conversation here? Is it because some people would say, hey, that's the NHL's not protecting their stars, and they would say, you know, the Canucks need to do a better job of having a nuclear deterrent alongside Pettersson, or is this just, hey, one of those things that he's going to have to fight through?
Well, I think that, first of all, I didn't like the slew foot. Like, to me, that should be a penalty.
The Backlund one, yeah. Yeah, no, I would agree with that.
That one I did not like at all. But the other thing is, like, whether people are like it or not, the NHL has always been like that. Like, they, you know, they like a tough league, and it's not as tough as it used to be, but it still can be very tough. And, you know, we came out of the lockout in 2004-05, and, like, a penalty was called on everything. And people didn't like it. Like, the players as a whole didn't like it. And so, you know, there's still a lot of penalties called for certain things, but it's never going to go back to that. I just don't think people liked it. And, like, some of the star players, like, I remember the guy who probably hated it the most was Steve Yzerman. You know, he thought it was crazy. He called it unrealistic, and that was the nicest thing he said about it. So I just don't think you're ever going to see penalties called the way it always was. But, like, I don't know if I believe so much in the nuclear deterrent anymore, but I do think there has to be something to be said for, hey, if you're going to give our guys a rough ride, we're going to give you your guys a rough ride. Like, you know, the Sedins took a lot of abuse, but that era Canucks, they gave a lot of abuse too. Like, you know, like, you look at those guys who are coming in to celebrate this week. You know, Ryan Kessler clobbered a lot of guys. Kevin Bieksa clobbered a lot of guys. Alex Burrows clobbered a lot of guys. I think, you know, that's the name of the game. Like, the best players take abuse, and the best teams give as good as they get. And you're never going to get as many penalties called as you like. And, but I just thought that night, like, the Canucks, it was weird. Like, Calgary was really vulnerable, and you knew they were going to be like that because their coach came out and like clinically ripped them for 7 minutes straight in the previous game. I don't know what anybody could have expected different. And for whatever reason, that night you guys were not up to the challenge. But I thought last night you guys were very different, to the point where Roussel got fined for it today.
Now, Elliot, before we let you go, tomorrow's a very special night here in Vancouver. Yep. I know it's going to be broadcast as well. The pregame ceremony starting at 6, the Sedin's jerseys going up in the rafters. And I know we talked so much about the Sedin's, and Walker and I have been kidding around. It just seemed like yesterday they retired, and we did a whole week talking about them. But the level of respect that they have across the league really cannot be overstated.
No, it can't. And you know, I think that, you know, I know that in Vancouver there was always a feeling that they weren't respected by people. I think anybody with a brain respected them. And the people who didn't are the biggest cement heads that you don't need to pay any attention to. I think one of the reasons they were targeted as much as they were was because they were good. And that was the only way at times to get them off their game. Like, I think for me, the thing I remember was that last game against at home, I guess you guys beat Arizona, and then you had to go to Edmonton.
Yeah, that's where the season ended, yeah.
I didn't think they should play in Edmonton. I really thought they should have ended it at home. But, of course, they're not going to listen to some idiot broadcaster, and they went. And I love the send-off they got after that game that night. Like, I think we all deserve to see – like, you guys hate Edmonton and they hate you, but everybody deserved to see them sent off that way in a non-Vancouver market. And I just think that shows you that the people who really know the sport and understand sports, they recognize greatness, whether it plays in their laundry or someone else's. And you know what? Like, I'll tell you, like, I watched the broadcast last night. I liked the banner raising. I thought Murph did some great interviews, like his interviews with Lyndon and Burke, I thought were really good. I know tomorrow night, because I'm in the studio, we're going to be deferring a lot to the Vancouver guys and Murph to get guests. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great night.
He's Elliot Friedman, brought to you by Maui Jim Sunglasses. The view is better from here. Some would call this an interview. Some would call it a desperate hookup. But we'll, either way, we'll talk to you next week.
Oh, boy. Well, we'll see. Usually those don't have repeats, so we'll see what happens.
What, you're not going to call? Come on. Talk to you later.
Take care, guys.
Elliot Friedman.